Welcome to another episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast with your hosts, Sean Sorrentino and Aaron Paulette.
Welcome to episode 140 of the Gunblog Variety Cast, a proud member of the Self Defense Radio Network. How are you doing, Aaron?
Well, I am very happy because I was able to teach firearm safety to Sarah Cade's cousin this past weekend.
So can you do that? I mean, like, do you know anything about guns, Aaron?
I know a little bit, you know, pointy part goes towards enemy, booger hook, bang switch, that sort of thing.
Line up the little bumpity things on top, right?
Yeah. I was actually surprised because anyone who knows Sarah knows that she is just amazing with firearms, and I was surprised that she needed to find anyone to teach a family member. I figured she could teach this person herself. But as it turns out, well, Sarah lives in Minnesota, and her cousin lives in Florida.
So?
Little bit of a commute there. So what happened was that I was tagged in a Facebook post by Sarah, and she said, "Calling my Florida gunnies. One of my most excellent relatives is looking to learn how to shoot and purchase her first handgun. Can anyone recommend a good instructor slash class within a reasonable drive of, location redacted, Florida?" And I was like, dude, that is literally where I live. I bet I'm not 20 minutes from her. And Sarah was all, "Well, would you mind teaching my cousin?" And I was all, "Sarah, please. Teaching gun safety to those who want to learn is exactly what Operation Blazing Sword is all about. Of course, I will be happy to teach her what I know." So she contacted her cousin and had her cousin contact me. And so that weekend, I showed up at her house with two pistols, two revolvers, a shotgun, a 9mm carbine, and an AR-15.
Jeez, Aaron, you got more guns than I do.
And I brought those long guns because when I talked to her to schedule it and find out what she was looking for, she didn't think she was planning on carrying concealed. And when it comes to home defense, I feel that a long gun is better than a pistol. So I just brought an assortment of things, a smorgasbord, if you will.
A plethora?
A plethora of pew-pew.
And I'm not going to edit that out. I'm going to make you live with that one.
So after introductions and pleasantries, I started off by explaining the four rules of firearm safety, and then I made sure she understood them. And then I pulled out each gun and explained to her the benefits and drawbacks of its particular design. And after I demonstrated how to operate it, I passed it over and let her get a feel for it. How to hold it, how to charge it or cock it, the difference between single action versus double action trigger, that sort of thing. And then we finished up with a demonstration of the three pistol stances, Weaver, Chapman, and Isosceles, and I let her take a turn on my laser light target. We had such a great time. We were at it for 3 hours, but it didn't feel like it. Time just flew by, really. She was such a great student. I threw a lot of information at her, and she absorbed it all and came back for more. She asked such good questions that I could tell she wasn't just paying attention, but she was also thinking through each answer and drawing her own conclusions. We ended the lesson with a pop quiz on the four rules of gun safety, which she passed. And she definitely wants to learn more. And so this coming weekend, or last Saturday, for people who are listening to the podcast on Monday, I'm going to be taking her to the county range to shoot a variety of handguns and maybe the 9mm carbine so she can figure out what's right for her. And I have a feeling that she is considering a concealed carry permit as well, because when I was packing up, she asked me if it was difficult to get one. So who knows, in a few months, we could have another concealed carrier in our ranks. So how was your week, Sean?
Well, it was a little interesting, actually. We took a trip Monday, 3 hours to Virginia Beach to look for another dog. Along the way, the wife and I witnessed a vehicle accident. Now, I don't see a whole lot of vehicle accidents, which is pretty surprising given I drive 35, 40,000 miles a year. You'd think I'd see more, but I don't. I think this is the second accident that I saw in progress. It's an older model pickup truck, and it just got plowed from behind by a semi-truck. It blasted this guy across the driveway, over and through a ditch, across the lawn, and like into the corner of this house. I pull over real fast, and I'm behind him when it happens. I pull over really fast, I grab my cell phone, and I sprinted towards the truck. I distinctly remember as I'm running across this grass, you know, hop the ditch, running through the grass to this truck, I distinctly remember feeling my SFD responder wrapped around my ankle with all my medical gear. And I'm thinking, well, whatever I'm going to find in this truck, at least I've got the tourniquet, I've got all that other stuff in there. I hope it's not bad. I get to the driver's window and I'm the first guy there. I tap on the window and I get the driver to lower the window. And then I, you know, hey, shut the truck off, shut the truck off, shut the truck off. Well, he wasn't really responding to my words, but it was obvious he was in a lot of pain. I look at him and I'm looking right first for blood, right? Obviously he's breathing. He's moaning and he's saying stuff. So I know he's good there. And I'm looking and I don't see blood. Big plus right there. And the second thing is I don't see any obvious broken bones, which, hey, all right, this is good. The problem was, is he wasn't really responding to me. Eventually this guy, who's like 85, something like that, he's not responding to me. I'm trying to talk to him, and his wife just sort of materializes at my elbow. I'm like, where did she come from? She wasn't in the truck. I didn't see anybody get out of the truck. I'm like, where did this woman come from? And she's like, that's my husband. He's hard of hearing. You have to yell. Sir, where does it hurt? Because I'm thinking, okay, do we have a broken bone? What do we have? And he's like, my back. I'm like, okay, well, there's nothing I can do for your back. And I definitely can make it worse, but I can't make it any better. So let's just keep you where you are. That's what I'm thinking. There's no fire. There's nothing really obviously wrong with the truck, right? There's nothing that makes the scene unsafe. He's not in desperate need of medical care, like no bleeds, no, I don't know, nothing like he's going to die from it. So it's like, keep him in place, right? A nurse comes over. I'm a nurse. Hey, here you go. Here's your patient. And then I sort of back off and I look and there's this crowd of people around us. And I'm like, if you didn't witness the accident and you're not a medical professional, get in your cars and clear the scene. I mean, I'm glad these people stopped to help. I really am. If we didn't needed to rip the door open or stop something from happening or any number of things, extra bodies would have helped. And I'm glad that everybody was there. But at a certain point, I'm like, okay, there's too many people here. You have no idea how long it takes for fire trucks and ambulances to get to a scene of an accident. Unless you've been in the middle of an accident, you have no idea how long this takes.
Actually, I do, because I have had to call 911 a couple of times for my parents. So, yeah.
I mean, it's amazing that we can get somebody 10 minutes with this this millions of dollars worth of equipment to rescue people that they don't even know, right? I mean, I love living in the future, but it's still freaking 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. It's an eternity when you're on that adrenaline high.
And I'm thinking, oh, thank God this guy isn't bleeding. And if he had been, I had two ways to stop the bleeding, which is great. And I could have at least kept him alive for those 10 minutes. But if I didn't have the tourniquet on me and he was bleeding, he'd be dead. There was nothing that I could have done. What am I going to do? Climb in there and wrap my belt around him or squeeze tight, try a pressure point?
Yeah, I think you would have.
I would have tried, but I knew. I mean, I'm running towards the scene thinking, if this guy's bleeding all over the place, man, I am covered here. I have it. I've got the tourniquet. I've got the hemostatic gauze. And I leapt out of the vehicle running. All I had was my cell phone, and I still had it on me. I could have reached underneath the passenger seat and grabbed the medical kit there that also has a tourniquet. It's the ambulance driver kit. So it has a lot of the same stuff. But leaping out of the vehicle and running to get what I needed done, it was easy because I had it on my ankle. So I cannot recommend this stuff enough. 10 minutes is a freaking eternity. As far as I know, I'm the only person that was on the scene that actually had medical gear. We had a nurse. I didn't see an aid bag on her. She was going to use her knowledge, I guess, but I actually had equipment. And seriously, in that eternity, you have plenty of time to consider how bad this could be before the rescue show. I'm like, aren't they supposed to just like materialize? That's the way it works in the TV shows, right? There's like, boom, Johnny and Roy are there. No, takes forever. What would I have done if I had none of that medical equipment? I mean, luckily there would have been no issue because he didn't need any of it, but it sure was comforting to know that I had it there. We're pretty lucky in this case. He needed a friendly face and somebody to hold his hand until the ambulance got there. They took him to the hospital. The wife and I gave our statements and we got cleared off the scene, and it was 20 to 25 minutes between the time the accident happened and the time we were off the scene. It turns out what had happened was this guy had been slowing down fast to turn right into his driveway, and the semi-truck driver behind him didn't see him signal, didn't see brake lights, anything, and then just plowed him from behind. So the way his wife just materialized, it was she was next door. Luckily, the house that he ran into didn't have anybody in it. There was nobody living there. But yeah, that was pretty frightening. Last I heard, and I spoke with the insurance adjuster, I was told, of course, they can't give out too many medical details, but that he is in the hospital or was in the hospital as of a couple of days ago, and he was doing fine. He's going to be okay. He had some minor injuries, minor by the, got hit by a semi-truck standard, but he's going to make a full recovery, which is great. For somebody who's 85 years old. Oh, the guy was on oxygen, by the way. Yeah, I'm very grateful that I did not have to deploy my medical gear. Get one of these things. It's SFD responder. Fill it full of some medical gear. Learn how to use it. I'm telling you, the day that it becomes, you might need it, is worth it.
You should probably contact the people who make the SFD responder and see if you can get a special Gunblog Variety Cast coupon code.
I think
considering how much you like it and how much you promote it.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah, I know. I really should. I should talk to them about them being sponsors or something. But yeah, I did actually send something out on Instagram saying this is what happened. And I actually got contacted by Ali, and he said, oh, great. Good job. I'm glad you had your stuff. So after all that, it was a 500-mile round trip to Virginia Beach. We came back. Dices took and passed her canine good citizen test, like with flying colors, easy peasy. She just rolled right through it. So yay, Dices got her CGC.
What a good doggy. Thanks to Lucky Gunner and Remington for their support of the Gunblog Variety Cast. From Golden Saber to Range Rounds, get a full lineup of quality Remington ammo that ships fast at LuckyGunner.com.
All right. Well, after that very long intro, let's get on with the show.
Oh, no, they didn't. The NRA banned the USCCA from their annual meeting. Why? Listen to Beth's segment and find out.
So I feel a little bit like I'm on some gossip show or something today because I am actually discussing something that is kind of gossip-worthy. It's an interesting turn of events that's occurred in the firearms industry that's really specifically directed at the United States Concealed Carry Association, or the USCCA, an organization with whom I work. And something interesting actually occurred as we were all getting ready for the National Rifle Association annual meetings. Like many other people, I've been getting together all my appointments and packing my things and thinking ahead to what needs to be done and what I want to check out. And of course, the rest of the USCCA team that was heading out to Atlanta was getting everything ready as far as the booth preparations, free t-shirt giveaways, and other paraphernalia and items that needed to be packed, and made sure that they made the checklist. Of course, you might have noticed that I used the word was. Yeah, they were getting ready, and the team was making preparations, but something interesting has happened with the NRA, and it appears that we have been disinvited to the NRA conference in Atlanta. Dun, dun, dun! Again, it sounds a little bit like I'm on a gossip show here, but it is very intriguing news. In fact, Delta Defense, or the USCCA, we have been part of the NRA annual meetings and had really a major presence there in a pretty large booth for the last 3 years. And we were definitely excitedly preparing for this year's event. We reserved our booth space, in fact, a full year ago. We had our team ready with their travel arrangements and booth and products, as I mentioned. But not too long ago, an interesting letter arrived at our home office in West Bend, Wisconsin, informing us that we were no longer allowed to be an exhibitor at the event, and they refunded our money. Of course, this was only 2 weeks' notice. That's a little chaotic when you are planning some major presence at a major event, so you can imagine the surprise and disappointment to hear of the NRA's odd and very last-minute decision. So I know everyone's thinking, well, why? Why is the USCCA not allowed to go to the NRA show? Well, I guess it's not that we're not allowed, but we are no longer invited to be an exhibitor or a vendor. And honestly, no real reason was given to us. So we are questioning everything ourselves. We're wondering if they now see us as a competitor. The USCCA is certainly growing quickly, and perhaps maybe we're flattered that the NRA, the giant that they are, is taking notice. But it seems very odd to us because, honestly, we're supposed to be in this together. We are all working toward the same mission of having responsibly armed Americans who are well-trained and who are well-versed in the laws and the regulations and who support the Second Amendment and live it in their daily lives. So it was a surprise to us. We still do plan to have a group of our team attending the show. Our founder and CEO, Tim Schmidt, will be there. I will still go. And of course, the USCCA will continue to support the NRA because of the work that they do lobbying for us. I mean, even if they don't want to support us, we support them. And honestly, when it all boils down to it, if this really is a competition thing because of the new plans and activities that the NRA has been cooking up, then the USCCA believes in the power and the importance of the free market. We don't see our business as a threat to the NRA, nor would we do anything to undermine the NRA. The niche we fill is different from that filled by the NRA, and we exist to protect Americans from violent predators. We exist to educate, train, and ensure responsibly armed Americans. So it's very strange, especially as a NRA member. I am a lifetime endowment member. I am a NRA certified instructor and RSO, and many of our USCCA team members are also members of the NRA and also instructors. So it's a very interesting conundrum. It's a very strange scenario we're walking into. But like I said, we are going to still support the NRA. We are still going to attend the meeting as NRA members and as media members, and I guess as supporters of all the other businesses who will be there. So that's about all I have on the strange gossip that the USCCA definitely was asked not to come to the NRA's party. And since it's their party, I guess there's not much we can do about it. In any case, I hope to see a lot of people out at the show. And I guess until we get more details, there might be plenty of speculation out there to keep people busy guessing what's going on behind the scenes. But either way, y'all stay safe and be well armed.
You can read more from Beth at usconcealedcarry.com/blog and click on Pacifiers and Peacemakers in the left sidebar.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the Donate or Subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us.
Felons behaving badly. Domestic dispute ends in fiery standoff. A man set fire to a home on Tuesday in Gaston County after a domestic dispute led to a standoff with police. Police arrived at the scene in Gaston County on the 100 block of Brindle Street near US 321. Police had been called to the area to aid in a dispute between the suspect and his girlfriend. The home, which was the residence of the suspect's girlfriend, was the scene of a standoff after the police arrived. Police reported that the registered sex offender, 28-year-old suspect, entered into negotiations with the police, which seemed, at moments, to be working. However, suspect later threatened to burn the house down. The man made good on his threats, setting the house on fire. Suspect later came out of the house when the flames spread inwards. At this time, police temporarily immobilized him using 2 beanbag rounds, which caused muscle spasms, and took him into custody, ending the standoff. Suspect's girlfriend was able to safely escape the home during the incident. Serious damage to the home was reported, but no other injuries occurred. Suspect was charged with second-degree arson, resisting arrest, domestic criminal trespass, assault with a deadly weapon, and failure to report a new address as a sex offender. He was booked into Gaston County Jail on a $500,000 bond.
I'm amused by the parenthetical statement about how beanbag rounds cause muscle spasms.
They cause owies. Like, ow, stop shooting me with the beanbag rounds, man. I give up. The only muscle spasm I'm likely to have in being shot by a beanbag round is might poop my pants.
I suppose, you know, if they hit you, then your muscles contract from the pain. So sort of, kind of, but that's rather like saying being shot causes a sudden, rapid loss of blood pressure.
Yeah, well, okay. Secondary to a couple of other issues there. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
So, in addition to being an arsonist and a sex offender...
Alleged arsonist. Alleged.
Okay, legally you're correct, but considering the police were right there when it happened, it's not going to be alleged for long.
Right, it does seem rather, I don't know, kind of an open and shut case.
Yes. So, those two aside, What other kind of record does this choir boy have?
Indecent liberty with a child, felon class F. Failure to notify, change of address, sex offender, felon class F. Failure to register as a sex offender, felon class F. And kidnapping second degree of a minor, felon class E.
Maybe he just should have stayed in the trailer while it burned.
Baron is on assignment this week. You're a badass. We know it. You can handle anything. But just because you can, doesn't mean you should. Miguel is here to talk with you about the fine art of picking your fights.
And salutations to you people. Welcome to the Flea Market of Cheap Ideas. Today I want to touch on something I like to call smart versus legal. Basically, pick your fights. Obviously, you probably by now heard the what happened in the with United Airlines and the kerfuffle that happened when they removed the guy and they bloody his nose and the people showing videos on social media. The eventual hit that the airline stock got in the market. And that was the initial, you know, expected reaction. What made it worse was the CEO of United coming out defending the actions of the airport police and removing this guy. I mean, the visuals of the whole thing were horrible. And even though he's right and you can be removed from an airplane for no reason, and that's the contract you take when you buy a ticket, I mean, it was stupid. It was, so the visuals were right. Now, as a CEO of a company, you are not hired to defend the airport police. You are hired to make a profit for the investors. You know, the people that actually have money in the 401ks and stocks and whatever, whatnot. That is your duty. He forgot that. He forgot that that was his duty. He wanted to look butch, I guess, and sided with the cops instead of, you know, giving a generic answer, shutting the hell up. And the company ended up that day with a loss of $225 million. I don't think they still have recovered from that hit. So basically, the CEO of United chose the wrong fight. And he chose the wrong fight because he forgot what was his objective. Now, how do you select your objective? That's personal. Okay, I can just tell you mine. Mine is simple. My goal is, the goal I have every time I go out is, you know, come to the end of the day, I want to sleep peacefully in my bed. That's it. And you may think, you know, it's rather simplistic, but bear with me for a second. If I am interacting with somebody, you know, there's one of those interactions, you start to get the feeling this thing is not going to go well. All the decisions I do following that identification are going to be with the objective of achieving that goal of, you know, sleeping peacefully in my bed that night. Now, sometimes that will require that I don't go Rambo, I don't go stupid, I don't go macho. That requires me not feeding my ego. If the guy is insulting me, if the guy is cussing my mom and all the kinds of stuff, you know, whatever, something happened, it couldn't be, you know, a slight fender bender, okay? And the guy's just throwing his rage, his foaming at the mouth, I simply do not engage my ego in it. I don't try to scream over the guy. I don't try to win the argument, even if he lost, even if he is the cause of the accident. Because a fender bender is going to be probably cheaper than bail. So that's what I want to do. Is if I need to apologize, I will apologize. I don't care. But, you know, you see it. And, you know, go to YouTube and check the road rage videos. And you're going to see in many occasions, you know, one other person disengaging from the event, apologizing or saying, you know, you're right, or saying, you know, hey, let's do something. Let's call the police office. I'm insured. I have, you know, I'm fully insured. Let's call the police. We make a report and we let the insurance company take care of this. Usually that sometimes, you know, probably will help, you know, having a third party. And even if the guy doesn't care about it or doesn't tell you or doesn't want to, call the cops. Bring somebody, bring a third party to the party. Okay? You need to de-escalate the situation. Now, if the guy starts calling you, start, you know, blaming you for everything, whatever and whatnot, just ignore him or just, you know, politely, you know, say, well, yeah, I'm sorry, apologize. We'll let the insurance company decide. Okay, we'll let the police decide. Don't try to prove that you are right. That is not the freaking point. That is your ego talking right there. This guy is challenging me, so I must win. No. What kind of a stupid jousting tournament do you think are you in? Forget about it. I mean, again, that is my point of view. So I want to go to sleep in my bed tonight. I want to hug my wife, have something cold to drink, and, you know, no problem. I don't want to end up in jail. I don't want to end up, you know, being fingerprinted and photograph and probe and whatnot, and ending up, you know, having fun with some ugly 300 guy all dressed in orange. Crazy soccer is gonna be my roommate for that night and who knows how many other nights. Yeah, I'll put my ego aside. I will take some warts in you know, spit on the face. I don't care. Okay, because, you know, at the end of the war, at the end of the day, words do not hurt. Again, words do not hurt. Being shanked in jail, it hurts like a motherfucker. Okay, that's what people said. Another thing that you can get in trouble is if you are being arrested. Unjustly arrested. Let's make the difference. You are being unjustly arrested. And obviously, you're going to be pissed. You're a good guy. God damn it. This is an injustice. Yes, you're right. But no, at that time, at that moment, that is not when and where you are going to prove your innocence. That is not when and where are you going to pick up your fight. That is going to be in court. Number one, you are dealing with a cop. It's somebody who's got a stick, he's got a gun, he's got a radio, he's got cameras going. Probably he's not alone. He's got somebody dressed pretty much about the same. And, you know, and another bunch of the other people like him are coming. So, deciding to get all huffy and puffy, the only thing it's going to do is maybe you're going to end up eating the asphalt. You're going to end up with several charges of resisting arrest with force. If you accidentally touch a cop, oh, shit, you're in big trouble because, you know, that's assaulting a police officer. And just because you couldn't keep your mouth shut at that time, you can go ahead and say, well, sir, I, you know, disagree, you know, what you're arresting me, but I will not resist. And please tell me, how do you want me to act? How do you want me to proceed? Maybe you want to talk very calmly. I know you are not, but very calmly. So, you know, why do you feel that I should be arrested or what happened? You know, if you don't mind. And then keep the conversation. If police got the cameras in the car, they're wearing cameras, that is evidence. You are showing that you were on the right. You were not making up excuses. Obviously, don't lie. And engage. You are gathering evidence. Something that's going to happen is, number one, if you're polite, amazingly, the police officer is not going to load you with charges most of the time. Number two, maybe when it comes time to trial or, you know, presentation, whatever the heck, the officer is not going to be as bad. And trust me, they can get assholes if they want to. If you're lucky, nothing happens. You got a good lawyer or a decent lawyer, and the charges will be dismissed. Don't bear bad sentiment. Don't go crazy. Don't go to Spartacus. Just simply don't be an idiot. Don't pick the wrong fight at the wrong time when you're being arrested. Just be smart about it. Decide what is your goal. And in case you haven't figured out, we are talking about an old saying. I forget who's come up with this, but it's something about, you know, what is your plan in life? And it's obviously personal security. The saying goes, your number one philosophy for personal security should be a lifelong commitment to avoidance, deterrence, and de-escalation. And that, kiddies, is how you should live. And that's it for today. As usual, if you have anything you want to share with me, complain, etc., etc., send me an email to miguel@gunfreezone.net. Altogether, gunfreezone.net. Have a good one.
Get more Miguel daily at gunfreezone.net.
Hey gang, this is Masad Ayoub from the Pro Arms Podcast. I'm here to remind you that our podcast is a member of the Self-Defense Radio Network, and I'm going to suggest you do what we do and check out the other podcasts at selfdefenseradio.net.
Main topic, concealed carry handguns as personal protective equipment, or PPE. Aaron, have you ever gone through any kind of industrial safety, hazardous control and prevention, any job where you work manually, they give you this class on how not to get killed on the job, right?
Yeah, I worked for about a summer in a machine shop. And so I got the orientation / don't horse around among the industrial machinery lecture.
Yeah, OSHA has a full, like, you must take this class on how not to get killed on the job. And one of the lessons is hazard control and prevention. Or hazard prevention and control, however you want to say it. I got into an argument with somebody on Facebook where, I mean, go figure, argument on Facebook, right?
You argue on Facebook?
I know.
You say?
I was very polite though, so I am definitely doing what my wife says and I'm being a nice person. I'm disagreeing without being disagreeable. In any case, somebody said, so carrying a gun lessens your risk, right? And I'm like, no, No, it doesn't. Carrying a gun does not lessen the risk of something bad happening to you, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Right, you're just as likely to get attacked with a gun or without a gun. What are they? Not like they know.
It's just another tool in your toolbox so that you can respond to the accident or threat or whatever properly.
And hopefully you can pull it out and use it in time if you have to, but it is something to protect you, not something to prevent bad things from happening to you. This is why you don't, oh, well, I'm going to carry a gun, therefore I can go to dangerous parts of town. No. Stay, what's the rules? Don't go to stupid places with stupid people doing stupid things at stupid times, right? Just because you're carrying a gun doesn't mean you can go and do these things.
Definitely don't stand on the corner minding your own business.
Sock mob. Standing on corner minding your own business. Do not do this. I got into the argument with him. I said, like, no, it doesn't. See, a gun is PPE. He's like, what? What are you talking about? Well, I'm just going to steal from OSHA here. There are three things that you should think about when you're doing industrial safety or pretty much any kind of safety. There's engineering controls, administrative controls, and then personal protective equipment. So many people's eyes have glazed over at this point. And some of you are just nodding like, yeah, we've all had that class. What OSHA says is applying this hierarchy is a systematic approach to identify the most effective method of risk reduction. You want to select the highest level feasible control. So Aaron, you worked in a machine shop. You probably were around rotating equipment, right?
Oh, definitely. Mills and lathes.
Exactly. What happens when you stick your fingers into rotating equipment?
Bad things.
Would putting on a set of gloves be the best way to handle rotating equipment?
Absolutely not.
What did they do?
Yeah, the motors were not only covered, but they had the warnings for both mechanical injury and electrical shock.
Exactly, right?
You know, in other words, don't try to service this while it's running, you idiot.
Do not use if stupid. Yeah.
God, can we get that?
Seriously, I love that one. But everybody's going to be stupid sometime. You're going to do something dumb. Somebody is going to trip and fall into rotating equipment. If you've got a motor and you've got a pump and you have a coupling between the two, the best way to handle preventing somebody from getting their toe stuck in that coupling or falling on it is to put a guard over it. That's what's considered an engineering control. If you take bad people and you place them in jail where they can't hurt you, this is an engineering control.
Huh, okay.
You have avoided the problem because the problem has avoided you. It is stuck in a place where it can't bother you. An engineering control is the top level. It's the best way to handle it. If you can't eliminate the risk entirely, then what you can do is you can build a guard around it. You can enclose the hazard, isolate the hazard. So you rig it up so that you can't do two things at the same time that would be dangerous. So you can only do one or the other by a mechanical interlock. That's why if you ever go into a dry cleaner, they have the press that comes down and presses your pants. They have to put their hands in two places and then fire it off with their foot. That way they can't stick their hands in the middle of it. Those are all great ways to handle it. You know, those are engineering controls. The next way to do things is with an administrative control. So if you have to go to a place that's really super hot, one of the things that you can do is in addition to drinking water, is that you can limit your exposure. You work for 15 minutes, you take a break for 15 minutes, or you work for an hour, you take a break for 15 minutes, whatever the rotate on, rotate off. And you did some ROTC, so you may be familiar with the concept of the black ball temperature, and they have a little box that measures it. And depending on whether you're acclimatized or not acclimatized, they have like the on-off work schedule, right?
Mm-hmm.
They did the same with us. There were times when I was in basic training, literally basic training, where we worked 15 and we were off 15. That was basic training. It was that hot in Georgia. That's an administrative control. Another kind of administrative control would be for like hearing protection. You got to keep the noise level low, but if the noise level is above a certain amount and you're going to be there for over a length of time, then you have to protect your hearing. But as long as you're there for less time than that, you're allowed to be there. The same thing works for atmospheric controls. Anything that can hurt you but is only going to hurt you over a length of time, that's something that you can limit the time that you're there. Other administrative controls: written work procedures, work practices, rules, alarms, signs, warnings, a buddy system. Your buddy saying, I wouldn't stick my fingers in there if I were you, that sort of thing, right? Training, stretching exercises, and break policies. All of those things contribute to your being safe by limiting your access over time or by training or any of these other things. This is a bit like, I would say, putting somebody on probation or In my case, not going to stupid places with stupid people to do stupid things at stupid times. These are administrative controls. There's nothing to stop me from doing these, right? I can right this minute, with the exception of stupid time, because it's, you know, only 7 o'clock right here. But I can find a stupid person, I can go to a stupid place, and I can do a stupid thing. The only thing that's stopping me is I have administratively decided I'm not doing these things. These are administrative controls. What if all of those things fail, Aaron? What do you do then? You said you were working with machinery. You were picking up sharp pieces of metal and moving them from place to place, because there's very few things in this world that are sharper than newly machined metal.
Oh, I know. I've cut myself badly on that.
So what would you do?
Yeah, well, we always had to have eye protection and ear protection. And if we were working either with anything sharp or if we were working with machines at all, we had to have some sort of gloves on. Not that it would really save our hands, but it would, you know, hopefully prevent the damage somewhat. You know, it'd tear up the glove more than it would tear up our hand.
Exactly. Most of the gloves I find are really for moving the metal around rather than you stick your finger in a lathe. The glove's not going to help you. But there's also a certain amount of, I'm putting on my gloves to do this job, I need to pay attention. So there's a little mental thing going on there.
Yeah, really. You put it on and just the weight and the heat of the gloves makes you more mindful that I'm messing around with something that could bite me. I need to be careful.
Right. And when we go to the range, we wear our eye protection, not a pair of glasses. We wear rated safety glasses. Because anything that bounces back off the metal targets or something like that, you're shooting steel and you catch, I mean, I've seen a guy catch a core of a 9mm bullet. It bounced back off the backstop and it hit him in the skull. Bled pretty bad. What if it had hit him in the eye? He was wearing his eye protection. A gun falls straight into that category. It's something that gets used in the event of an emergency, in the event that something bad happens, it's your last line of defense. And if you ever take any industrial safety class, if you take this class, they're going to tell you personal protective equipment is your last line of defense. It's not your first line. It's not the first thing you pull out to deal with any problem. It's when everything else you've done fails and now you have to defend yourself. If you're one of those guys that thinks, oh, I've got a gun, I can go to the dangerous places in town, you're making a mistake here.
This is actually a point that I have been making in the various interviews I've been doing, because the interviewers always like to ask, well, does having a gun make you safer? Does it make you feel safer? Does it make you feel more confident? And I say, a gun is a tool. It's just another tool in the toolbox, like my first aid kit or my fire extinguisher. Just because I have a fire extinguisher in my kitchen doesn't mean that I don't need to call the fire department if the kitchen catches fire. It just means I have a way to respond immediately while waiting for the trained professionals.
Exactly.
Same with the first aid kit, like with you and your SFD and in the paramedics. Same with the gun. I've got it there to respond immediately while waiting for the trained professionals to show up.
When you're explaining to people what a gun is for, a lot of people have gone through industrial safety. So explain these things to them. Say, look, you want to solve the problem at this level and not let it get to the level where it's personal protective equipment. But in the end, when things go sideways, you're going to be happy you're wearing those safety glasses. You're going to be happy that you're carrying your tourniquet, or you're going to be happy that you're carrying your gun.
Right on. Tiffany is on assignment this week.
And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Erin Paulette.
Come on, every pony. It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Erin Paulette.
This week's topic comes to us courtesy of friend of the podcast, Sarah Cade, who asked for advice on how to find family members in an emergency. And that's a great question. However, it's very tough to answer because in an emergency, the best way to contact family members, cell phones or the internet, may be down or so overloaded with traffic that no signal can get through. However, there are some tips and tricks that I can pass along to make finding a lost family member easier. Now, the first thing to keep in mind is that during a disaster, texts are far more likely to get through than voice calls because texts require far less data. So ensure that family members have a phone that can send and receive texts. At this point, I think even the dumbest flip phone can text, so this shouldn't be a problem. Next, make sure that your family members have a way to keep that phone charged. There are a variety of ways to do this, and the simplest of those is to make sure that each phone has a charging cable and both a wall and car adapter. A portable battery to charge the phone when they can't get to an outlet is also a good idea. I recommend the Anker Astro E1, which is literally the size of a candy bar and can fully charge an iPhone 7 twice, and it only costs $17 from Amazon. Another good way to keep your cell phones operational is with a hand crank dynamo. I like the ones that are also flashlights and AM, FM, and weatherband radios because that's a lot of utility in one package. The Iron Show Emergency Dynamo costs only $17.99 and belongs in every prepper's bag. But even if the cell network is completely down, a cell phone can still be useful in locating your loved ones. Make sure that you have a picture of each of them on your phone. If you have the time, take a picture of them right before you evacuate so you also have a visual record of what they were wearing. And so if you get separated from them, you can show people their picture on your phone while asking, "Have you seen this person?" rather than just trying to describe them. Now back in episode 9, I recommended that people scan their critical documents, driver's license, passports, vaccination records, etc., and keep them in a thumb drive. This is still a good idea. In fact, you should have other family members' information on this drive as well, because if you can make it to a FEMA shelter, the government or the Red Cross might be able to help you find out where your family is, and having copies of their documents can't hurt in trying to locate them. Of course, you don't want all that personal information just hanging loose on a thumb drive, so I suggest encrypting it. I'm sure Baron will jump in next week if I get it wrong, but I've found that a great tool is an on-the-fly encryption tool like VeraCrypt, which creates a virtual encrypted disk on your thumb drive. So long as you remember the password, you can open the encrypted files easily, but it will take others a long time to break through. Pro tip, since you need to actually run the program to decrypt your data, install a copy of it on your thumb drive as well. Finally, the best way to find your family members in an emergency is simply not to lose them in the first place. Pre-plan rendezvous spots for if you ever get separated in an emergency. For example, my family uses the acronym ACE. If we get separated, or if we cannot reach your house due to a disaster or fire, our rendezvous spots are in order: the airport, our church, and the local Epic Theaters, ACE. If you have to evacuate in multiple vehicles, make sure that every single one of them has a detailed atlas for every state you may have to travel through, and designate meetup spots in case you get separated. This may be as simple as the first rest stop across the state line, or as complex as a street address. Write these locations inside the cover of the atlas so they won't get lost. And yes, I said locations, plural. On a long journey, you need more than one. The general rule of thumb for military convoys is a rally point every 20 miles or so, but you don't need to go that route. Something simple like every Chevron station at an interstate exit or every highway exit that ends in 5 will suffice for most purposes. So there you go, Sarah. I hope you found this interesting. And if you or if any of our other listeners think of something I missed, go to gunblogvarietycast.com, click on the Contact Us tab, scroll down to Aaron, and leave me your idea in the comment box. Don't forget to click on More Ponies before you hit Submit.
In Oklahoma, there was a home invasion that resulted in the resident successfully defending his life and property with a firearm. Since Weird is covering it here, you know what to expect in
This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery.
So a few weeks ago, a team of robbers forced their way into a private residence. The home was occupied, and unfortunately for the robbers, the resident armed himself with a rifle and defended his life and property. The three men who entered the home were all killed, while the driver fled the scene. The grandfather of one of the deceased robbers had these statements to make to the local media.
What these three boys did was stupid.
Leroy Shoemaker agrees his grandson Jacob Redfern and his friends made a bad decision, but not one worthy of deadly consequences.
They knew they could be punished for it, but they did not deserve to die.
So he's right. These boys didn't deserve to die, nor did the defender deserve to have his home invaded. Still, he's right about the stupidity of their actions. We all make bad choices in life. Choices like not smelling the milk before you pour it into your cereal may have minor consequences. Other choices may be more severe. Does the person checking a text message while driving their car deserve to die? No, but we all know that a foolish choice like that is foolish because it could kill you or another person. Same goes with home invading, or robbing in general. It's a bad idea because it's a horrible antisocial behavior, but also it might cost a life, either the robber or the defender. If you or your family doesn't want to deal with any of this, simply don't do it.
Shoemaker says his grandson didn't have a chance. The 17-year-old, he says, never got into trouble.
Well, he had lots of chances. Not breaking into houses is extremely easy. I do it every day. And in fact, I'll be doing it again tomorrow. As for not getting into any trouble, well, the surviving member of the gang doesn't support that statement.
Now, Allison also telling police that Rodriguez took the boys to that same house earlier that day, and they made off with liquor and speakers, but it wasn't enough for her to pay her rent, so they went back, and that's when they were killed.
They'd been doing a bunch of these daytime robberies. Just because they hadn't been caught yet doesn't mean they weren't getting into trouble. That proverbial tree in the forest that falls when no one's around? It makes a sound.
Brass knuckles against an AR-15? Come on. Who was afraid for their life?
Maybe the guy who was napping in his home when three men broke into his house with brass knuckles? The leader claimed they thought the house was unoccupied. If so, why bother bringing brass knuckles around? Some reports claim the knife recovered on one of the deceased was a pocket knife. That may be a simple burglary tool. But the knuckles? They aren't good for much besides assaulting people. And even weapons aside, three men against one is disparity of force. And given they were breaking into his home, defense with a deadly weapon is indeed justified. Lastly, when a lawful citizen is defending themselves against violent criminals, I'm hardly interested in fair fights.
The homeowner's son has not been charged with a crime, deputies saying they believe he fired in self-defense.
There's got to be a limit to that law. I mean, he shot all three of them. There was no need for that.
I'm glad he's not being charged. As I've been saying, this is looking like a very clear case of self-defense. People have been put in jail for even clearer cases, so I'm relieved to hear this man isn't going to be charged by an overzealous prosecutor trying to make a political stand. As for the limit of the law, if his grandson had immediately left the way he came when they found out the home was occupied, the law would not have protected the residents' use of deadly force. That wasn't their plan. I suspect the brass knuckles were the contingency in the event that the house they presumed was empty happened to be occupied. I don't know the dynamics of how the actual fight went down, but I'm not going to second-guess the actions of a man who has woken up to his door being broken and finding three armed, masked men in his kitchen.
Shoemaker does say he is for the right to bear arms and protect your home, but he doesn't agree with shooting and killing intruders.
He supports the right to keep guns. Okay. He supports the right to bear, as in carry and use them. Check. He supports the right to protect your home. Naturally. But he doesn't support the right to use lethal force? How does that work? Does he think you could just shoot somebody in the leg? Or fire a shot into the air?
Fire two blasts outside the house.
Maybe just wants you to have and use the gun, just not the bullets.
The past is history and you can't change history, but you can damn sure learn from it. And maybe some kids will learn from this.
I've been bagging on this guy, but I have to agree with him here. This is a lesson that needs to be learned. Don't prey on your fellow man, because occasionally your target might not take kindly to your actions and strike back. Killing an intruder in your home, or one who is threatening your life, is legal for a reason. We don't tolerate this behavior as a country, and to some degree we don't tolerate it as a species. Don't do these sort of things, and your relatives won't be crying about your untimely death to the TV news. Before I finish, I also had to cover some comments made by former prosecutor and TV personality Nancy Grace on this case. Grace certainly is siding with the defender, so she's hardly an anti-gun nut. But even when we're supporting our side, we need to be very careful of the framing of our arguments as well as the words we use, lest we give fodder to our enemies.
This is Stand Your Ground. All those Stand Your Ground laws really got a bad rap after George Zimmerman used that when he gunned down a teen boy, Trayvon Martin.
If this is how you're going to be on our side, Nancy, please stop. Number one, this is not Stand Your Ground. Stand Your Ground is in part a limit in the duty to retreat from a deadly threat before using lethal force when you are lawfully on public ground. This case is Castle Doctrine, which in part identifies one's residence as their personal sanctuary, so it is your safest refuge. By that legal definition, it is impossible to retreat to a safer place if you are threatened in your home, or in the case of the law, your vehicle or a hotel room. Number two, the George Zimmerman case was not a Stand Your Ground case. While that law exists in Florida, it was not cited by the defense. Instead, the case was presented that Zimmerman shot Martin while Martin was in the act of beating him to death, and Zimmerman was pinned to the ground and unable to retreat. Stand Your Ground got a bad rap around the Zimmerman case because, just like this clip, just about every utterance of the law has been factually incorrect.
It is an AR-15. That's considered bad in a lot of ways. It's just like an M16 military rifle. It is semi-automatic.
Can we stop prattling on about the AR-15 like it's some mythical weapon or somehow different from any other semi-auto rifle? If we're going to keep comparing an AR-15 to the full-auto M16 or M4, why don't we just scrap the whole NFA, because obviously it doesn't make a difference. In closing, I'll say I'm glad the young man who defended his home is safe, both physically and legally. It's a shame that the three young men died that day, but they were young men who were breaking into homes with the intent to do harm if confronted. So one must be careful making comparisons between these young men and people who don't do horrible antisocial behavior. The anti-gunners want to make those comparisons, because anti-gunners never argue in good faith.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com.
Plug of the week, the NRA annual meeting. You'll be listening to this sometime. Hopefully, you'll be listening to it in the first week, which means by the end of the week, it's NRA annual meeting. And we're going to be there.
We'll be there so long as more Atlanta highways don't mysteriously buckle, cave in, catch on fire, get hit by the fist of an angry god, that sort of thing.
I blame the anti-gun lobby. First off, if you're going to the NRA annual meeting, you definitely need to say hi to us. We'll be difficult to find. You're just going to have to send us a text message, use Facebook. Go to our Facebook, gunblogvarietycast.com, use the contact, send us an email, whatever you want to do. Get in contact with us and say, hey, I'm at NRA, want to see you guys. And we'll figure out how we can see you at some point.
It would probably be best if when you get there, you look on your map and you find out where the media room is, because that's where those of us who have media credentials will be, and we know where that is. So if nothing else, we can just say, well, I'll meet you outside the media room in 15 minutes.
But what about those people who are not going to go to the NRA annual meeting and want to follow along, want to see what we see? Well, I want you to follow us on Instagram. I'm at Instagram at SDSorrentino, and I bullied Aaron into starting an Instagram account.
Yes, you did.
So there you go. You'll be able to get pictures from Erin. You totally want to follow her. She's Erin Palette. Remember, that's Palette, your little pal, P-A-L-E-T-T-E. Erin Palette on Instagram. Beth has her Instagram account, which is Beth619. Tiffany is TiffanyJ901. And I'm still working on Weird. Can't help you there. That's going to be the list of us who will be at NRA annual meeting. So follow us on Instagram. We're going to be hashtagging our pictures with hashtag GBVC for Gun Blog Variety Cast. So you can also follow the hashtag and see all the stuff without following any of us. Whatever you want to do. You ready for this, Aaron?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I am leaving for Atlanta on Monday. I'm getting there early.
Oh, wow. That way you can get around any streets that collapse.
Well, there is that. But the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to detour to Live Oak so I can take the test for Mag 40 that I missed because I was sick. And then I'm meeting up with some friends and we're going to hang out and I'm going to get a makeover and just have a good time so that I am looking my best. I am absolutely Southern Belle radiant for y'all in Hotlanta.
Yeah, I was just talking with Tiffany and Tiffany is nervous-sighted as well. She's looking forward to it, but she's nervous. So you definitely, I know you all like Tiffany's segments, so if you're there, you definitely need to meet up with us and say hi to Tiffany. She needs to meet some of the people who love her segment. I'm constantly getting emails saying it's a great segment. She's awesome. So if you're there, you definitely want to follow her Instagram and then say, hey, Tiffany, where are you? I want to meet you because your segment's awesome. You can do that with me too, but mostly do it with Tiffany. Well, that's our show for the week. Remember that the Gun Blog Variety Cast is a member of the Self-Defense Radio Network.
Find the show notes at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode140.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gun Blog Variety Cast. Music courtesy of Rob Allen at blog.roballen.com.
you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. This podcast is made possible by the Firearms Policy Coalition and by contributions from listeners like you.
Maybe he just wants you to have and use the gun, just not the bullets.
Try that as maybe he wants you to have and use the gun, just not the bullets.
Maybe he just wants you to have and use the gun, just not the bullets.
I put the stress on gun and bullets and skip the stress on the other one and see what that sounds like.
Maybe he just wants you to have and use the gun.
You did it again.
Just not the bullets.
You did it again.
Maybe just wants you to have and use the gun, just not the bullets.
You're still stressing the use.
Maybe just wants you to have and use the gun, just not the bullets.
Again.
I didn't either.
You did, absolutely.
Oh, God damn it. This is going to go on the outtakes. And just like the last time, you're going to be wrong. Maybe just wants you to have and use the gun. I did say that time I did say that. Don't laugh. It's not funny. It's not fucking funny. Don't look at me.
This is a URS production.